Texas. Keep on talking. That's exactly what we intend to do. And it was really cool to kick off with the Style Council and Wanted from 1987. Maurice Misolowski is in Melbourne. How are you?
Yeah, very, very good. Happy Tuesday, everyone.
Happy Tuesday.
And happy post-Australia Day.
And happy nearly Year of the Snake, which is tomorrow.
Yeah.
Happy last day of the dragon. And all of the above, Maurice. I saw an article the other day, and it sort of made me think, oh, it's right up Maurice's strata, this one. So the article is entitled, Human Hands Are Astonishing Tools. Here's Why Robots Are Struggling to Match Them. And I thought, things that robots haven't quite cracked, but I'm sure they will one day. It reminds us of our AI conversations, Maurice. Almost, but yeah, not quite. Brilliant, but, you know.
Yeah, but it's brilliant. It's not brilliant because we're kind of wanting them to be like us humans.
And
they can't be and they shouldn't be and we don't really want them to, even though I've just said we do.
But they want them to function as well as parts of us do. Isn't it incredible to think that we still have bits that work better than robots?
Yeah, and we do and we always will do. I mean, humans are humans, robots are robots. They're trying to do the same sorts of end results as we kind of do. But at the end of the day, they're really just dumb machines. I mean, they're machines that we taught. Some of them work well, some of them don't. And hands, feet are astonishing. I mean, whoever created them, whenever they were created, I mean, I'm talking about our physical hands and feet, did a pretty good job at them.
Absolutely. This got me thinking, though, you know, and it got me thinking about, I wonder if Maurice has ever done the thing about, Daddy, how does AI work? And Daddy goes, bang, 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 and the kid gets it. I had a friend who wrote a book for kids once about theory of relativity. And and at the end, the kid has to sign and say, do you understand all of the above? Yes. Well, you now understand Einstein's theory of relativity. I want someone to do similar for AI and things like this. There's your mission.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, whatever.
I've read lots of stuff, I've written lots of stuff, and hopefully it explains it. But artificial intelligence is exactly that. It's trying to mimic the human brain as much as possible into doing stuff or doing stuff for us that we're too lazy to do. And I mean that with great love, because all of our technology, literally all of our technology, is trying to get other things to do things humans don't want to do.
Doing all right,
like
though, isn't
tractors,
it?
Spades, shovels, all of that was really just about not trying to exert our hands and our feet as much as we once did.
The reason I'm bringing up this thing about hands particularly, well, that's an interesting read, it's a BBC article. Mm. I know you're very interested in gerontology and helping the elderly in various ways with your mates in Queensland. So this thing starts off saying, obviously the hand is like the tool, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's a superb piece of architecture. I'm talking about our physical hands.
The actual hand.
It is quite extraordinary. And we are trying to, of course, as much as possible, for a whole lot of reasons, mimic it. One is for robots working wherever they're going to work, because we know as humans we pick things up, we move them around, you know, we do all kinds of things that require them to be lifted and whatever else we do.
Yeah.
But it's also, as you said, for the notion of those whose hands don't work as well as they once might have or don't exist, that we would love them to have the capacity as much as they want to have them, to whatever level they want to have them, to be able to pick, to lift, to do as these things might normally do.
I suppose we're no longer really talking about prosthetics exactly, are we?
No.
We're talking about people who have all their digits and limbs, but maybe they don't work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in one sense, and we are talking about, the reason I say no to prosthetics is because many of us, me included, still have the old impression of, again, I'm going to use that word dumb, meaning that it doesn't do anything, a dumb prosthetic. You know, it's kind of like a bit of wood.
Keeps you standing up.
Like the old, yeah, exactly. It's like the old pirate with a peg leg, which you can't say anymore, and I didn't say it just now, but it's that kind of thing that we're not thinking about anymore. These things, especially the ones that I've seen, and I've only seen a few of them, and there are so many others in so many labs, are extraordinary.
Give us a clue, the kind of thing.
Well, even though we said they're not as poetic or as, you know, they don't dance ballet as beautifully as our hands do, they're quite extraordinary. There was one at the CES this year, again, wasn't there, but saw it through video, that seems to have the dexterity. So we know how our hands made up, and that's not a small thing to say. I mean, it sounds obvious sitting in 2025, we know how our hands structured, but only 50 years ago, we didn't have that understanding of the nuances of all of the innards and the bones and how our sinew, everything else worked. We know that now intimately. And what a lot of, well, I say all of the people who are trying to reinvent our physical hand into a digital hand or into something that works in the same way. They've taken all of those bits and pieces, and what we now have are robot limbs that are pretty much structured like a hand. So they have muscles and they have the ability, they have joints, they have all kinds of things.
It's aesthetic too, isn't it? Because let's be perfectly honest. I mean, if people are missing something, they want to look as, quote, normal. I mean, I know the whole thing about, there are various definitions of that word, but they want to feel like they have limbs they were born with.
In some ways, although we've had this discussion before, Phil, and we've spoken to somebody on air actually about a couple of years ago.
Totally.
So from the perspective of Queensland, as you said, and I do work with Griffith University, reimagining disability with 400 researchers, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But one of the researchers there, and I still, his name's Dwayne, I mean, we'll call him Dwayne because his name is Dwayne, says to me, and he doesn't have legs and hasn't had them ever.
Did we speak to him?
I think we did.
I think we did.
He was the guy that went into space.
Yeah, I think we did.
It was about a year and a half, 2 years ago. So Dwayne tells me often, and as do many other people that don't have legs or a leg, that they don't really want legs like they used to have because there are so many more choices now. He actually has. It's kind of like, if you can imagine, remember Batman in the comics, in the movies, where he opened up a cupboard and there were all kinds of different weapons available to him, each of them perfect for the situation he was going in? Dwayne has a cupboard like that for his legs.
Brilliant.
So, I mean, it's not the lair, and it's not all this secret stuff, but he literally has sets of legs, as I know many others do. One is for running, one is for walking, one is for hiking, and they all do different things, and they look very different. And he doesn't want a normal set of limbs because he doesn't have them, can't have them. So he said, look, I'd much rather have a prosthetic or a limb that actually is fit for purpose. It can actually make me run faster. And
very logical.
And the limb attachment that he has for that makes him run faster. It's almost like a hook. It's a very, I mean, at the bottom. So it's very large. It's cylindrical. It's actually balanced. It's perfectly engineered to allow that running motion to take place.
Yeah.
And another one is shorter and sharper because what it allows him to do is to walk and to stay upright in a very different way.
There are different areas sort of here, aren't there? I mean, I totally remember that and I know exactly he's right. And he's allowed to, you know, request or need or want what it's up to him, isn't it? There are different areas.
It absolutely
here.
Is.
Let me just refer to that article as I was about to. So, you know, obviously the big, it's almost like alchemy, the at the end of the rainbow, the human hand is one of the most staggeringly sophisticated intricate parts of the body, more than 30 muscles, 27 joints, network of ligaments, tendons, 27 degrees of freedom, and so it goes on. You can see why they're really sort of wanting robots to get there.
Yeah, they are. And the next line out of that is the one that they're having difficulty with because the muscles and the freedom they can do.
Yeah.
But it's 17,000 touch receptors and nerve endings in the palm alone. That's the bit that's difficult.
That's incredible.
Because you and I would assume, and maybe it's just me, I have no idea how my hand moves. I mean, I don't. And I have no idea how, you know, I can sit here and I can think about my fingers moving and I'm moving them now, but I actually don't know what I'm doing to make that happen. I don't know what happens inside my palm when I touch something that's hot.
Yeah.
I know what I'm expecting. I know what I will do as a reaction to it. What I'm saying is that all this stuff is intuitive. It's actually built into us.
If you want a bit of fun, Maurice, when you're walking along the street, just look down and try to analyse what your feet and legs are actually doing.
Oh,
it really makes you trip up.
Doesn't it? It's quite. And if you think about it, you just, as you said, you stumble. So if we're doing this as humans who most of us have the ability to move our limbs in some way or other, that's why these robots are so difficult because, yes, I've said that scientists have gotten really, really good at understanding all these numbers and things of how many movements of muscles and the rest of it, but this is so nuanced. Being our hand. And one of the things that's often used is an egg, you know, trying to pick up an egg. A robot trying to pick up an egg is the one that's often used as the example of how good or how bad that robot hand is.
Yeah.
And there are robots that can do it, and there are hen houses that need robots to pick up eggs to put into containers. But apart from that, Phil, I mean, what else do these limbs do in that sense?
So I just wrote, you know, things that robots haven't cracked yet. Well, that's pretty much most things, isn't it? Is there anything that robotically assists us and it's brilliant?
Well, robots are good. They're in their place. And if we listen to our friend Elon Musk, who we have to mention every couple of weeks now at least, he says that his prime robot will be out this year, next year.
Oh,
it's a thing that looks humanoid, looks like a human, stands about 6 foot tall, scares the hell out of me just looking at it on screen. But he claims they're very, I mean, not soft and cuddly, but, you know, very friendly and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, his robots, he claims, will be able to walk around the house and do all that Betty from Jetsons stuff. Betty was the housekeeper from Jetsons who we thought would be able to lift everything, do everything. everything, cook everything.
Yeah.
He claims that it won't come out of the box that way. It won't be this year. But down the track, he thinks his robots will be pretty good at doing that, and he's going to use the smarts from Tesla, from the cars, and from the, you know, from the satellites, all the other things that he knows about, which is why I don't really say it's not possible, because if anyone can do it, this guy can. But that's the kind of place that he's pushing to. But will robots ever be able to replace us as humans? I think it will for tasks, you know, for certain activities.
Like really sophisticated stuff, Morris, not like cleaning up cat litter.
Oh, look, even cleaning up. Last week we spoke about a silly robot, and it was a silly robot, that's a vacuum cleaner that kind of vacuums by itself, has an arm that comes out of it from CES, and it picks up socks and does all kinds of bits and pieces around the house. That's a robot.
Yeah.
A dishwasher is a robot. A washing machine is a robot. It's a machine that's made for a single or multiple purposes. So we do live with them already, and we do like a lot of them already.
You know, the Elon Musk thing you were just talking about, I mean, brilliant. Yeah. But do you think is he perpetuating that sort of schoolboy sci-fi thing that it has to look human?
Oh yeah, absolutely. But there's been a lot of scientific work around that.
Yeah.
No, there's been a lot of scientific work around that. There are two camps. One is exactly as you just described, those who believe it should be human, and the other one is, as you inferred, the people say it doesn't matter. We just need something that does this thing for us. Psychologically, and there has been a hell of a lot of testing in this in the last 40 or 50 years, not just new, is that the outstanding results always come in favour of things looking like a human.
That we get.
Now, that's in the sense of these devices interacting with us.
Okay.
If it's a single use, if it's a device that really doesn't need to interact, like something that works in a warehouse, you know, it doesn't really have much human contact, then nobody really cares. But we don't want to talk to a lump or a bump or something that just doesn't seem to be human-esque. And we also can't use our emotions or our senses in the same way with those lumps and bumps.
You know who's got this done brilliantly? The guys at Boston Dynamics with their essentially dogs. And they...
Yeah.
But you go, don't you? Almost. There's a good
now,
point.
Again, it's at CES this year. Now, most people, when they think of Boston Dynamics, which is actually owned by Hyundai now, they bought them a couple of years ago. Still called Boston Dynamics, though.
Yeah, yeah.
But I say that because we can expect to see a lot of the smarts from that go into robots, go into cars. But at this year's CES, the one we all think of is that dog-like device.
That's
that human
exactly what
has.
I'm saying. You sort of want to call it good boy. Don't hang on a minute. It's a robot.
Yeah, you do. So at CES this year, they showed an equivalent thing of that for $1,500 US.
Oh, yeah.
Now, not available, can't buy it, but they claim when it goes to market next year or two, it'll come down dramatically to that price. I don't know why you would want to buy that one.
Yeah.
But the purpose of saying that, Phil, was that Boston Dynamics, that dog. Yeah, but it's 60 to 100 grand plus to buy that thing. And of course, it's very, very, you know, distinct in what you would use it for. But when it comes down to the pricing being quite cheap, maybe not the dog, but maybe other versions of it become really possible and practical.
Yeah, there's a video doing the rounds. I don't know if you've seen it. It's one of those. And the guy picks it up and it throws a tantrum.
No, it
really acts like a dog, like a husky going nuts. It sort of kicks its legs around, not in a really that would damage the fellow. And then he puts it down and it behaves itself.
I'm not going to find it. I haven't seen it.
It's really cool. I mean, so to give our chat some kind of meaning, as we always say, the thing about
we're going to start with something new this week.
The thing about the human hand, is that something that medical technical researchers really are looking into, or do they not feel the need?
No, they are. They absolutely are. And we will get better and better at it, as we have already. They are, for the reasons as we said, just for the human prosthetic, you know, that need for people that don't have a limb that works properly. They certainly want to replace that with a facsimile for those that want that. As I said, others will choose to use different things for different purposes.
Yeah.
But we also, there is also great need. There are things that we do with human hands that others could do, strangely enough.
Yep.
We talk about, you know, caring for people when they're aged or infirmed. The hand, the touch, is actually one of the most joyous things that we can provide to other people.
Oh.
I know it sounds as if we should have people that do that, and of course we want to, but in nursing homes, caring for children, I'm talking about infants who are sick, those sorts of things, it may be purposeful to have a hand that actually functions as a hand in those kinds of things.
Well, they've synthesised lots of things with VR. Is there sort of a touch, what's it called? What's the word?
Haptic.
That's it.
Haptic. Yeah. HAPT, I see haptic. Now, absolutely, that's part of what's going to be, or part of what already is. Haptic means that when you move, it actually feels like it's doing something. And many of us experience, in fact, we all experience it when we touch our mobile phone, and it feels like we're clicking, when in fact nothing's happening. We're just touching a piece of plastic or glass.
Mm.
So it feels like it's moving. That's exactly what's happening in haptics. Now, we will see these get better and better. It's not just our hands. It's also our feet. It's all sorts of bits and pieces that we use to be able to move around the world that we will mimic and put into these robotic-type devices.
Do you happen to know what the sort of most desirable area for haptics might be in the area you're interested in, gerontology?
Haptics really are, well, there's a great use for it in, and it's fairly old. It's a seal robot, S-E-A-L, like the animal seal, which is used in dementia cases. And what you do is you give this dementia patient a seal, or there are other versions of it now. It's basically giving a child a teddy bear, if you can think of that.
Yeah,
but what happens is that there's a bond created between the patient and this inanimate object. And the inanimate object makes noises, it coos and does whatever you program it to do. But what importantly it's doing is it's noticing how the person is engaging with it. It can actually tell by the level of feel, by the squeeze, by the touch, whether the person is engaged with it or not, if the person hasn't touched it in a while. It sends a message across to nursing staff. It keeps constant record of blood pressure and does all kinds of things. All of this is done through haptic touch in the sensors that are built into this robot, which is, again, in most cases, sold as a seal. I don't know why that's the animal they chose, but I've seen it as dogs and teddy bears and other things. Used a lot in Japan because Japan has a great need for elderly care, doesn't have a great number of people to do it with, but it's definitely moving its way across the world as well.
It's an interesting thing to bring everything we've talked about together. It's very therapeutic when people can stroke, caress animals.
That
feeling of fur or whatever. That's what brings it all together.
It does, the feeling of intimacy. I mean, really, that's what it is. The touch is quite an incredible sense, something we take for granted. We use it really to engage with our world. And it's not just touching through our senses, you know, through the hands. We also touch through our skin because we feel wind, we feel heat, we feel all kinds of things. The ability to take information in from the outside world is really what we're talking about here, and bring it into our own world, which is our body, and making sense of it.
So it's not necessarily the limb per se, it's the uses of it.
Yes, absolutely. And we often think about it as being our hands and our feet because we take for granted how many other senses we have on our body, right across our body, everywhere from our head to our toes, that really engage with the world and bring that information in for us.
Brilliant, Maurice. That's where we're going to put the lid on it. I will catch up with you next week. And Maurice Futurist, go on, tell us the rest.
It's morrisfuturist.com. Happy New Year.
You too, man. Take care. I'll catch up with you next week. Always fun having a chat there with business futurist Maurice Misselaus.